The lease was in his name. That was the first thing I noticed when I finally looked at the paperwork. Not the clause about the 60-day notice, not the line about rent responsibility in the case of early departure, but simply his name at the top and mine nowhere on it. I had been living there for 11 months. I had paid half of everything. I had put a plant on the windowsill and a shelf of books along the east wall, and I had believed, the way people believe small, comfortable things, that this arrangement was mutual. Marcus left a glass of water on the kitchen counter every morning before he left for work. Just one, his, he never explained it, and I never asked. The glass would sit there all day, usually with a faint smudge near the rim from where he had drunk the first sip, and by the time I came home, it would still be there, waiting to be washed. I washed it every night. I don't know when that started. I don't know when I stopped noticing it had. I met him through a workshop, not a therapy workshop. I want to be clear about that. Though the distinction becomes harder to maintain, the longer I think about it. It was a communication seminar, the kind that corporate teams send their mid-level people to when they want to appear invested in something. I was 31, recently promoted, still performing the version of myself that had gotten me there. Marcus facilitated. He had the vocabulary of someone who had done a great deal of interior work, and in that room of people who were mostly performing confidence, he was the only one who seemed genuinely unafraid of being still. He said things like, "I'm going to hold space for that." He said, "That response sounds like it's coming from a triggered place." He said, "When two colleagues argued about a presentation deadline, I noticed there's a lot of activation in the room right now. I wrote down the phrases. I thought I was learning something." We started talking after the second session. He asked questions the way therapists do, not to gather information, but to make you feel witnessed. By the third conversation, I had told him things I had not told my closest friends, and I registered this as evidence of his perceptiveness rather than of my own hunger to be understood. I was lonely in the specific way that busy women in new cities are lonely, visibly fine, structurally isolated, running a life that looked complete from the outside and felt from the inside like a house with no one else in it. He noticed that, he would say later, that he had seen it immediately. He said it with warmth, with something that read like tenderness. He said, "You've been your own primary support system for a long time, haven't you?" And I said yes, because it was true, and because being named accurately by another person feels so much like being loved. I want you to understand why I moved in with him, because it was not impulsive and it was not foolish. I had been offered a contract renewal in the city at a rate that made my current apartment impossible. Marcus had a second room that he had been using as an office. He had suggested, casually, that the numbers could work. He had framed it as practical. He had a way of framing most things as practical, which I later understood was how he kept everything deniable. The therapy language began almost immediately, but slowly enough that I cataloged it as growth. When I said I was tired after his friends came over and stayed until midnight on a work night, he told me it sounded like I had a boundary I hadn't communicated. When I mentioned that a comment he made at dinner had stung, he said, "I'm hearing that you were triggered by that. Can you sit with where that's coming from?" He never said he was wrong. He said I was processing. He never said he was sorry. He said he was grateful. I felt safe enough to share. I thought I was in a relationship with an emotionally evolved man. I thought this was what it looked like when two people did the work. I had spent enough years in relationships with men who couldn't name their feelings at all, and here was someone who named everything, mine, his, ours, with the calm precision of someone who had been to therapy many times. I realize now, confusing fluency with sincerity. I was mistaking the map for the territory. There is a thing that happens when someone speaks the language of emotional accountability without actually practicing it. The language becomes load-bearing. It holds up the structure of the relationship in the place where honesty would otherwise have to go. Marcus never lied to me exactly. He reframed, he contextualized. When I raised something that bothered me, he would say, "I want to make sure I'm not being defensive right now," and then be defensive, but call it something else. He would say, "I'm noticing some codependency patterns in how you're relating to this," which meant, translated, "your feelings are your problem." He would say, "This feels like it might be worth exploring with a professional," which meant, "I am done with this conversation." I stayed because I believed I was learning. That was the mirage, that this difficulty, this constant recalibration of my own responses, this perpetual examination of my triggers was making me better. He told me I had unresolved attachment issues. He told me my conflict avoidance was keeping me stuck. He told me that my difficulty naming my needs was a pattern worth breaking. Every critique arrived dressed as care. Every correction arrived dressed as insight. And because I was genuinely someone who wanted to grow, someone who took her own psychology seriously, I kept doing the work he assigned me without noticing that he never assigned himself any. The glass on the counter. I started counting how many mornings I washed it without him acknowledging it. 31. 40. I started to feel something about the glass that I could not say out loud because I could already hear how he would respond. "What is it about the glass that feels activating to you?" I would end up defending the glass. I would end up defending myself for noticing it. I had learned by then that bringing anything small to Marcus meant having it reframed as evidence of my dysfunction rather than his carelessness. That is the mechanism, and I want you to hear it clearly. When the language of emotional health is controlled by only one person in a relationship, that person controls the definition of what is reasonable. They get to decide what counts as a conflict worth addressing. They get to decide whose reaction is proportionate and whose is triggered. They get to be the clinician while you are always, somehow, the patient. I started to edit myself before I spoke. I would have a thought, something direct, something clear, and I would run it through the filter of how he would receive it, which meant running it through his vocabulary, which meant translating my own experience into terms he had approved. I noticed, after a while, that I was using his phrases when I talked to my friends. I was telling them to sit with things. I was asking them if a feeling was coming from a grounded place. My sister told me I sounded different. I told her I was growing. The lease, I brought it up in February, 10 months in, after my name appeared nowhere on a utility bill I had paid for 3 months running. I said I wanted to be on the lease. He was quiet for a long time. The specific quiet of someone who has decided the conversation is beneath a response. And then he said, "I'm noticing some scarcity energy around this." He said, "This feels like it might be connected to some trust issues we haven't fully processed." He did not say no. He said, "I want us to both come to this from a regulated place before we make structural decisions." I waited for the regulated place. I am still not sure it was ever scheduled. I left in April. I left because of a Tuesday. He came home, and I had moved the books on the east wall to make room for a print I had bought. And he stood in the doorway and looked at the wall for a long time and said very quietly, "I would have appreciated being consulted about the shared space." And something in me, Something small and stubborn and still mine thought, those are my books. I put them there. I moved them. That is not a shared space. That is my wall in a home where my name is on nothing, and I am 32 years old, and I am tired. I did not say any of that. I said, you're right. I should have checked in. And I heard myself say it, and I heard it land. And that night, I found a sublet, and I started packing. Here is what I want to tell you, and I want you to hold it. The vocabulary of healing can be a leash. The words boundary and triggered and trauma response are real words. They describe real things. But in the mouth of someone who has decided they are the only person in the room qualified to use them correctly, they become the architecture of a very quiet cage. You will not see the bars because the bars are made of language you were taught to respect. You will not feel the door close because it closes in increments, each one named, each one explained, each one offered to you as an opportunity for personal growth. The glass is still on the counter somewhere. Probably, someone is washing it. I hope she notices when she starts.